This podcast is brought to you by...
Shall we begin?
In today's high-tech, fast-paced world, you need a wonderful website to promote your business. You have a vision of how you want it to look, but you need someone with the skills to design it. Isn't it comforting to know that David Webb Designs not only has the experience to create a professional site, but he's ready and willing to listen to your ideas and suggestions? He'll work with you every step of the way, until you're happy with the final design. That's davidwebdesigns.com. Don't just dream about the perfect website. Get it with davidwebdesigns.com.
Let's unstrap your bra, draw the bath, and get ready to get unleashed. Blizzstone.
I know it's your first time. I'll be gentle, I promise.
Don't put it in there, though. It'll hurt.
David Allen.
I think I can probably keep it up that long.
I think, see, you're a young man. You can keep it up. I was like, what the hell? How about the picture of her with an avocado on her? I think we're going to have fun together, you and me, aren't we?
Now you're getting in the mood for Unleashed.
Coming back to you with more energy than ever.
And welcome to David Allen and Liz Stone Unleashed. I'm your host tonight, David Allen, and I'm joined tonight by my bosom buddy, Liz Stone. Hey, Liz.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I love that bosom. And you're my buddy, so there it is.
I know, yeah. I know. Liz, are you ready to get free? Because let me tell you what, if you can read my mind, you already know. You already know who's on the show tonight.
I do.
This is the woman who loves
fabulous.
And continues to be in your face.
Mm-hmm. She does. She's going to be in your face. That's right.
So let's get her
never,
on the show
never,
tonight.
Never to be forgotten.
Never, never. Let's introduce this Ultra Nutte on the show. Hi, Ultra. How you doing?
Hi, David. Hi, Liz.
Hey, Ultra.
That was a guarded introduction with that pronunciation of Nutte.
Uh-huh. I know.
I heard that hesitation
Let's set the record straight. Before the interview here, we Liz and I have been debating back and forth for a couple of weeks how to pronounce your name. She said Nate, mm-hmm. I said Nate, and then you said it straight tonight. So what is the proper pronunciation?
It's Nate.
Nate. There you go. So Nate. Ultra Nate. Yeah. Can I just call you Ultra?
Yes.
Is that okay?
Ultra is fine. I would appreciate not using my whole name.
But since you're a famous world traveler, tell us how your name is pronounced in the different countries you're so well known in.
Well, depending on where you are, as I said, it's Nate here in the U.S. In England, it is Nate. There's more emphasis on the ah, and also in France. If you're in Germany, it's more so they ignore the accent mark on the E, and it becomes Nate. And then if you're in Spain and Italy, sometimes it becomes ultra Nate.
Interesting.
They turn the U into a different, it becomes a different sound as well, so it becomes more ultra than ultra.
Wow, that's fascinating.
They bring it together as one word, so it's more like ultra.
Well, you'll always be ultra fabulous to me. I hope you don't mind.
Well, that's
that.
All that matters. Hello.
I do have a question, though. I need to know your beauty secrets, girlfriend. You get more gorgeous with time. What are you doing? What's going on? You're gorgeous.
I'm doing everything.
Everything. Okay, let's
everything,
hear it.
Everything. Whatever it takes, I'm doing everything. I try to generally live a very healthy lifestyle anyway because the music business is absolutely bananas. And if you're not regimented, then you can, you know, quickly begin to look weathered. But I've always been into working out and fitness and things like that. I've always been into yoga, eating healthy. I try to eat organic as much as possible. And then, you know, it comes down also to your gene pool and just taking care of what God gave you, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're an inspiration. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, yeah. I appreciate that because, you know, I've been in the business a long time and, you know, people can see those pictures from 25 years ago at this point.
Yes.
It's a lot to live
gorgeous.
Up to.
You're gorgeous then and you're gorgeous now. There's really,
thank
actually,
you.
Well, I mean. You're just beautiful all around, inside and out, too. And I absolutely love your music, too. Like, Free has been our anthem in the studio for the past, like, 2 weeks now. We're like, oh, God. It's like, you know, the song just never dies. It's great.
Well, I hope not. I hope it's one of those classics that goes on into, you know, into the next generation and on and on and on. Well, it's already gone into the next generation, but even beyond that one. So, you know.
I think that. So tell us a little bit about yourself. You have such an interesting story. Tell us your story.
Let's see. The quick story is I was a club kid here in Baltimore, where I still live, and I was interested in going into medicine as I graduated from high school, but I also at the same time discovered the club nightlife culture and immediately fell in love with it. And in that environment, I met what would become my producers, which were the Basement Boys. I started working with them kind of for fun, actually. As I said, I was going into medicine, and I was going to University of Maryland here to study pre-med and all those fun things. So I had this real, you know, specific path that I was planning on being on. And then the universe just kind of changed all of that and brought out a whole different situation. When I started working with the boys for fun, the first track that we ever wrote, that I had ever written and ever sang, was a song called It's Over Now, which myself and Teddy Douglas and Tommy Davis all penned in the basement, literally. And I just kind of did a really rough recording of it that night. They sent it to their friends. They were all DJs here in Baltimore. They sent it to Tony Humphreys in New Jersey, who was, you know, handling the business at Zanzibar, which was a very pivotal time for underground house music because it was starting to bubble out from the underground to the mainstream, and out of Chicago and New York and places like Baltimore and some of the small metropolises around on the East Coast. My song started really cutting through as a demo and getting heavy rotation from Tony Humphreys and key DJs like Norman Jay over in the UK. The Basement Boys, their first A&R person, took my song with her as she moved from Jump Street Records, which was a small underground label, to Warner Brothers, her next job. And so with that signing, I then became signed to a major label out the gate and did subsequent singles and an album, Blue Notes from the Basement, and charted in the UK, did Top of the Pops, and, you know, all of this whole other lifestyle just kind of opened up for me. And I kind of just did it by trial and error. I had no formal training. I had never written songs before. These were all my first forays into singing and learning my voice. I had never really even heard that before. So it was a very interesting experience, that first album, and then the second album from Warner again. At that point, I was dropped from Warner, and I had to come to a place of deciding if I was going to continue with the music business or if I wanted to go into medicine, go back into my studies, which by now it's like 1994, and I've had done two albums on a major label. I decided to keep working in music, went writing a lot of songs with no record deal in place with a lot of friends of mine in New York. And at the time, I had a really great reputation. I had chart viability and all of this notoriety, but I still was struggling as an artist. Dance music was changing from the underground to the mainstream. The sound was becoming less garage and more pop. And my next movement was to sign with Strictly Rhythm. The first song that I wrote was Free, and the rest is history. So here we are, like albums later. I've still been doing it. I went on to do two albums with Strictly Rhythm, the Situation Critical album and then Stranger Than Fiction. And then since then, I've been completely independent for probably the last 11, 12 years, releasing my music and albums completely independent on my Blue Fire label in partnership with my management, Peace Biscuit.
You know, you're quite the Renaissance woman, though, because you do wear numerous hats. You're a singer, songwriter, producer, DJ, label owner. It just goes on and on. I mean, that's so impressive. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but my take on you is, first of all, pre-med, you have to be extremely intelligent. So that being said, it just shows how you can transition from that discipline into the music world. And to do all these different things, I'm amazed by that. How do you juggle all that, Ultra?
You know, fortunately, the necessity to become all of those things didn't happen until much later in my career. And I had a very charmed situation, which I didn't realize at the time, in that I had a really strong, supportive A&R person at the label. I had a really strong, supportive management team, and I had really great producers and songwriters that I was working with. So out the gate, I was set up in a way and put on a path, really, of setting a standard, so to speak, of what is expected of me and what I should expect in return in terms of how I want to present myself as an artist. So I was able to learn all of those things, you know, while doing it by trial and error, and actually like putting out material and putting out product and having this really great support system around me to kind of learn the ropes of the business side. My management insisted that I learn the business side of things really early on because I had no idea. I was really just kind of the wide-eyed kid, just like in, you know, with like a deer in the headlights, really just kind of going through the motions. But the fun thing, the thing about it was that I was a club kid. So for me, it was all just a further extension of being a club kid. I go to the club and I dance, and for me it was about what am I going to wear this weekend, and you know what my friends are doing. I had a really great crew of friends here in Baltimore, gay and straight and whatever, and everyone was really creative and fun, and so it was about the costuming and the attitude and the this and the that, and so I had all of these really great tools that I was able to utilize when it actually became a business. So all of those things really fortified me for later on when the music business pretty much flipped. And the necessity then became for me to step into these shoes of now being the business person in terms of the production and the releasing of the records and the, all of these other things, a further extension of what I was already doing as the songwriter and the singer. And the DJ thing, that was pretty much my own decision to kind of step into that. But again, it was for fun and out of the necessity of what was happening in the music and in the scene here in Baltimore and wanting to keep proliferating our sound as things were starting to change and die off a little bit here in the States. So, you know, as they say, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention or however that's
said. Amen.
You know, sometimes now, you just got to get on with it. And, you know, you just can't be afraid to make mistakes. That's the biggest thing. You cannot be afraid to fail and make mistakes because that's a part of the process.
Absolutely. We learn that every day here. Honestly,
yes,
we really do. We make so many mistakes, but that's all part of the learning process. But did you desire to be like to cross over to the mainstream as a crossover artist?
I don't think it was a conscious decision when it first happened. I crossed over out the gate from my very first song, which
right.
If you listen to it now, is a very very underground, very garagey, very muddy. Very linear kind of song. It was just a vibe. Like it wasn't, you know, this amazing like pop sheen kind of dance track. It was very moody and bluesy and kind of tilted to the left and quirky in a way. But it connected with people. There was a certain level of sincerity, and the sound was very new. So that record became a top 20 pop hit in the UK. And I was, as I said, I was doing Top of the Pops out the gate. So for me, I would be in America and be underground and hang out with my friends, and it was business as usual, and no one knew anything different. And then I would go to the UK and be a pop star. So I was sort of living two lives, which was fine because I'm a Pisces, so I have two personalities. It's fun, you know, and it's kind of been that way my whole career. I'm used to being, you know, in different situations. And if you know, you know. If you don't, then that's fine too.
Right. Now, the reason I ask about that, though, is because my absolute favorite song by you was Desire from 2000. And to
yeah.
me, it gives a feeling of, like, wanting more. Is there more of a personal meaning to that song?
I think at the time, you know, you have to look at sort of, like, the timeline of what was going on in the music business when we get into that particular era. That's during Stranger Than Fiction. And that was when the music business was going through a really serious downward spiral. This was the beginning of the downward spiral that ended up completely flipping the music business.
Right.
And it was a lot of trouble with labels. And actually, the album took longer to come out than it should have because I was changing labels, and labels were closing up and merging, and it was just kind of a mess. And it was also on the back of the success of the Situation Critical album, which had singles like Free and Found a Cure and If You Could Read My Mind, and then as an outside collaboration, the Stars on 54 project with If You Could Read My Mind. So I had these really significant pop hits globally at that time, and now I'm working on a new album. It needed to really connect in a way, and there was a certain level of pressure in writing for that situation that I had never had to experience before. Every record that I had done before that period, was written leisurely, and whatever I happened to come up with at that moment, I didn't have to think about it beforehand. Like, what is the music business doing right now? What is happening sonically with music? What are people listening to? How are songs being written? You know, how does my voice need to translate? There was a whole new set of demands in writing that record, with Desire being the first single than I had ever experienced before.
And speaking of, if you can read my mind, you've worked with Amber and Jocelyn Enriquez with that track as well. Mm-hmm. That was an awesome track too. How was it working with those two? Because I absolutely love Amber as well. So.
Well, at that time, you know, Strictly Rhythm was at the top of its game, and Tommy Boy was at the top of its game as well. I knew of Amber and Jocelyn Enriquez, obviously, because we were all in the dance world, and we would perform in some of the same, you know, situations in the States. When Miramax did the film 54, suddenly out of the blue, they wanted to rewrite the ending, include the song, and then they made the song kind of the theme of the whole movie. And that's when we really got to really work together, because before that we didn't really cross paths much except in passing. When we went in to record the song, we spent the whole day with the Berman brothers. And we all just sang the song down from start to finish, and then we all ran out of there to get to whatever planes flights we needed to get to wherever in the world. And we didn't see each other again until about 2 or 3 weeks later, when Miramax called and said, we want to rewrite the ending, and we want you guys to be in this, like, for one night only. Steve Rubell comes back, and you guys are the closing of the movie.
Yeah,
and then after that,
phenomenal.
Obviously, we went on tour. We went on tour for it, and we spent more time at that point. And the girls were great. In fact, I just did a show with Amber for the first time in like probably over 10 years, just a couple weeks ago in California in Palm Springs at the Bear Convergencers. And it was great. You know, it was just like old times. You're just, you know, slipping on an old shoe.
So now, speaking of tours, just between us girls,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about the craziest shit that happened to you on tour. Give me your number one story.
Oh, man, this
it's
so
just
unique.
Us. It's just us.
Let me just tell you, the past guests, we've had our past guest that we've had, poor Lindsay Mack, I'm going to bring her into this.
Oh.
She was performing at a club one night, and this guy just kept screaming baloney pony at her. Baloney
so
pony.
Funny.
Oh, my gosh,
so
that's funny stuff.
I think if we can top that, you know, so we're always asking people, like, on tour, what is the craziest thing? Because I want to know, like, I've never heard of that before, so...
I don't think I have anything that bizarre. Most of my fans have always been really respectful in most of my shows. I mean, I've had random bizarre things like I did Ministry of Sound, and I think this was like one of their first opening nights or shortly after the opening of the Ministry, and it was really dark in the club and really super black on stage. Well, there was water on stage, which I had no idea, and I think I was doing Free or Found a Cure. I think I was doing Found a Cure, and hit a certain point in the song where the energy just kind of jumped in at the chorus, you know, just before the feels like I'm going insane. And I think all of us kind of jumped, like, ready to, you know, just like let it go. And my heel went flying, and I went flying,
mic
went flying.
There's nothing
like
the flying
into
flying
the
heels.
Front row somewhere, and it was pitch black. I couldn't see where anything went. I didn't know what happened. All I knew was suddenly I was on the floor. In the middle of Found a Cure, but somehow or the other, I scrambled, got back up. Somebody in the front row handed me my mic, and I was, boom, right on key, right at the moment when I was supposed to sing again. It was, like, flawless. Fortunately for it being pitch black in the club, most people had no idea that I even fell. They just thought, you know, I did a pop, dip, and spin or something. I don't know. But
why was there water on stage? Did they want you to river dance or something?
Yes, that is the million-dollar question, Liz. Yes, about that.
I'm trying to figure that one out.
Yeah,
I'll never
they
forget
killed
when
me.
Fell
now,
on her
needless
ass.
To say, the next 2 days I was completely broke down. My back was killing me, and I was wrecked. But
oh no!
You know, for that moment, it was a Madonna moment. You know, the Madonna fall moment that everyone saw.
Okay.
You know, right?
Oh,
yeah,
poor Madonna.
Nobody saw mine. Nobody really got it. You know, only my dancers knew what had happened.
One supreme fall, so the other one may rise, right? Is that what happens?
You know what? It's about the recovery. It's not about the fall. It's about the recovery.
Oh, amen, sister. You are the supreme, and you did recover, and you are rising all the time. And
exactly.
I'm impressed with you. I mean this. I'm not just saying this to flatter you, but you're phenomenal.
Thank you.
Absolutely phenomenal. And I want to be you when I grow up, or if I grow up. I guess that's it.
I'm still growing. I'm still on that path of growing, and you know, there's still a lot of music and a lot of work to be done, and a lot of great things to experience. But you know, the music business is a little crazy quagmire right now. But you know, I know that in 5 years I'll be looking back on this moment and saying, you know, wow, this is what was happening at that moment, and we didn't even realize it.
But I hear you're really lighting things up in France. You're a famous DJ over there. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
My French residency happened because, how long has it been now? Maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, I was DJing for the Tommy Boy party. It may have even been longer than that, maybe 6 or 7 years. I was doing the Tommy Boy party on the rooftop, and this was a really nice industry event, which those kind of things had kind of gone by the wayside since the conference has gotten so big and so sprawling and so many different events going on, and people are scrambling to get from one thing to the next thing. And you can't really get that cohesive moment where everybody just kind of clicks and the synergy just happens and everything just kind of translate of we are the music industry. You know, those moments don't happen so much as they used to. But this Tommy Boy party had kind of created that same moment because for some reason, like, everybody came to that party. And I was on the bill. It was myself, Louis Vega, Danny Tenaglia, and Bob Sinclair all DJing, which, you know, for me was like, wow, I'm DJing. It was
that's
like
cool.
A really
good
serious,
company.
Serious
yeah.
News, and I'm the only girl. That's fabulous, you know. But apparently the program director from FG Radio in France, which is a really big dance station, 24/7. It is a terrestrial radio station. Was there, and he heard my set, and he loved it. And he contacted my French booking agent, who was also in Miami at the time, that he wanted to have a meeting with me. So she immediately got in touch with me, and the next day we arranged to have lunch. And that, the rest is history. He's just like, you know, his name's Antoine Baduel, and he wanted me to be a resident on FG. I've been a resident now for about 6 years, probably one of the longest-running residents because they change the roster every year. And one of the few women, and mostly it's really huge big-name DJs or brands that are known around the world. So to be affiliated with that, to be a part of that, and to have been a resident for so many years is really amazing. And about 3 years ago, I was actually nominated for Best DJ, you know, on the station. So
I'm just trying to visualize your look when you're DJing in some exotic location. Paris, for example, just indulge me. Tell me the kind of outfits you're wearing. What does your hair look like? You know, I'm visualizing Fish from Gotham, you know, the power woman who's just like, she's
crazy,
in charge of everybody.
Crazy.
Come on,
No.
When I'm
DJing, I take my DJing seriously. So what I might wear on
Fish
stage
is serious. Yeah.
When
okay.
I'm performing, Fish is very serious. I'm a Pisces, I get it. But what
okay.
I might wear on stage is some of the crazy costumes that I might wear on stage when I'm performing. You know, I don't go that far when I'm DJing because I need to be able to focus on my playing, and I don't want it to become about gimmicks, you know. So, you know, obviously you want to bring it because it's still a show. Unfortunately, now they call DJing a show, which still baffles me. But, you know, I kind of I want people to focus on the music that I'm playing and creating this vibe. I don't want it to be about, you know, how long my eyelashes are, which, you know, is a thing. But that's not what it needs to be so much when I'm DJing.
Now let's talk.
But you're bringing
your
the energy. You're bringing the energy to the crowd. I'm sure you are.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
You have to turn it up. Obviously, I'm an artist, and people have a certain level of expectation, and I always meet that. But I think there is a way to create balance. When it comes to your DJ set, because there are too many people out there that already downplay women as DJs as it is, and I don't want to reinforce that by being anything other than, you know, worth my salt when I get on the turntables. You know, that's
amen,
really
sister.
What I'm about.
Amen.
I don't think getting by on just being an artist, being a name that people know, is good enough.
Let's talk about your costumes for a second. I love your album covers, and I love the performances that you do. Do you design your own costumes, or do you have a designer that does it for you?
Both. It depends what it is specifically. I mean, there are certain things that I've worn that were put together by designers for different purposes. Maybe it was from videos or just for stage or whatever, or it may just be things that I see when I'm out and out looking for, you know, a piece, a showpiece, as we call it. I'm looking for a showpiece, you know, to see the thing. So it depends on what it is.
That's outstanding. Now, how about, like, we're going to switch gears here for a little bit. How does your personal spiritual, like your spirituality guide, how does that influence your music?
I think it influences everything. It's pretty much how I live my life by. It's my standard of living, because there's a certain level of expectation for myself. And I feel a certain level of responsibility for the energy that I put out in the universe. And I feel like you get that back. So for me, it's always about putting out a positive vibe, a positive image, and in hopes that those things come back to you in the universe. I absolutely believe that. And I think we all, as artists that are in the public eye, we have a certain level of responsibility for that. I mean, I don't dictate anyone's art. Art is definitely relative. It's, you know, it's all an opinion-based.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, coming from a spiritual place, I want to be able to stand behind anything that I did years from now. I don't think of things so much in the here and the now. Even when I'm writing music and producing music, I'm thinking about 20 years from now, how is this going to translate? Are people going to listen to this song and feel good about it? Is there something in this record that speaks to someone? Am I going to listen to this later on and cringe, you know? Because sometimes when you're making music, you're so close to it, it's hard to be objective.
Right.
And so I have to kind of have this standard of things that I go by. I have to have a gauge, some sort of barometer. So yeah, having a spiritual base, I think, is a very good place to start for that.
So would you recommend, like, who do you listen to, any of the new artists that, you know, that are out today? And if so, like, what advice could you give them to kind of, you know, live the career? Because we've talked to so many great, great artists, such as Crystal Waters. We talked to Robin S. and, you know, now you. And it's just, it's so great to hear, like, you know, 20 years ago you did a song and it's still relevant today. You know, but unfortunately, mm-hmm. I fear that the new artists today, like a Taylor Swift or a Meghan Trainor, you know, 20 years from now, are they still going to be relevant?
That is the million-dollar question for them. Someone like Taylor Swift, she's at a level, I think now, way at a level where she's going to be fine 20 years from now. I mean, those pop songs that she writes, and like Meghan Trainor, they may not connect so much for our generation, but I know my 9-year-old loves the stuff, you know, and I have to respect that and understand that those songs are not written for me. You know, they're not written for us. But I do get it, and I do actually love it. I love a good sugary, sweet popcorn pop song, you know, all day. That may not be what I would choose to write when it's time for me to write, but I certainly get it and can appreciate it. Making a future classic, you know, that's not something that you can, you know, just dial up. You know, there's so many different things, so many different elements that have to happen with a record to make it become a classic. And, it, you know, it goes beyond just building the song from the ground up, although that's the basis of it. But then it's the timing that it comes out and how it resonates with people. And, you know, there's so many different ingredients to that. If you come out with 1, 2, 3 of those in your lifetime, you've done something amazing to create something, create a work that transcends just that moment in time on the dance floor or on the radio.
That's excellent. That's good. And also, of course, you know, social media wasn't back. It wasn't very big when you were
exactly.
when you started. Mm-hmm. How did you manage to get yourself out there and let the world know, look, here I am, and listen to my music?
For me, it was definitely being signed to Warner Brothers out the gate, because
right.
being on a major, as I said, it set a precedent. In that I had major label budgets, and they were able to afford marketing, proper marketing and promotion and art and really do artist development. And that also goes back to having a proper A&R and proper management, which a lot of artists in the dance music genre are lacking. And that's why there are a lot of there's a big gap in the dance, the artist being there. And now the DJ has taken over as the producer, and that's why. They become the artists, because there's lack of artist development. They, you know, labels don't have the money anymore to spend on developing an artist. Developing an artist is an investment. It's saying that I believe in this raw, this diamond in the raw here. And we know that there is some future amazing things coming out of this person, and we're committed to it, and we stand behind it by making a financial investment. They don't have the money for that anymore because the industry went belly up. So nobody has time for that. So now you have to come to the table already developed, and that's a lot trickier for a lot of artists just starting out. It's a much trickier environment these days. But the upside of that is that there are other avenues to build your profile and to get your music going and to start garnering a fan base on your own that you didn't have, you know, way back in the when, you know, 10, 15, right. 20 years ago. So it's still a difficult game, but it's just the model has changed significantly.
That's so interesting, because I do believe that social media certainly has helped, but it also kind of hurts at the same time, because
it's absolutely,
as I mentioned before,
a blessing and a curse. Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse,
yeah.
Because there's also so much information out there that the consumer is just, you know, obliterated with, you know, listen to my this, check out my that, blah, 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 blah. It all becomes background noise in a minute. And how do you rise above the background noise of so much garbage being put out, because every Joe Schmo can make a record?
Agreed.
It's all about connecting. It's all about connecting with people, and that's what you do.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a tough game.
And like you said earlier in the show, though, like, you know, your looks today. We talked about your looks. You know, 20 years ago, they could pull those pictures up from 20 years ago to now. So that, you know, I personally, and I've said this before, and I'll continue to say it till the day I die. If it's 140 characters or more, I want nothing to do with it, because I cannot read it. I cannot read it.
Yeah, social media has given
you,
all of
Twitter.
Us ADHD, whether we want it or not. That's my thoughts on this.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I miss about the situation now is with, you know, the way that the music is broken up with iTunes and everything is singles-driven. You know, a single, releasing a single as opposed to an album doesn't give you any kind of real idea of what an artist is about. And that's the unfortunate part also for a lot of new artists coming out, because a single is just a snapshot, whereas the album gives you the whole story. You need to have the whole body of work to really get into who this person is. When you're selling an artist, you're selling a brand, you're selling a lifestyle, you're selling who this person is and what their creative output is. If you're only getting a single, then you're only getting one dimension of that story. And that's kind of a real loss for art, and actually for the consumer, because there's something to be said for listening to an album of work from start to finish and in the order that it was designed to be in. But that's a whole nother story. We could be here for 2 days talking about that. But, you know,
it's
like all of these different things that are part of the issue of how much more difficult it is to really break artists in a real way these days.
Right, and it's great that you brought that up, because I remember being a kid, I used to love the store. It was called The Wall, now it's FYE, and I used to love going in and grabbing a single, and then, you know, oh, I love this song, and then turn around like a week later and go and buy the whole album because I want more. And I think it's funny, because these artists, they release one single, and then it's like a 5-track album, and then, you know, 2 months later, they're releasing the entire album, and it just gets progressively, like, I feel like they're being pushed, like they're being spoon-fed. Here you go. You know, let's just get this out one now. Now keep working. And they just work for artists. That's crazy.
Well, they're definitely doing that, but they're also trying to just keep the lifespan of a record going, because now the average lifespan of a single is, you know, 3 weeks.
Wow.
Well, it probably doesn't help that it gets played 4 times an hour on radio stations.
But when it's about digital network, digital sites, you know, they release 15,000 dance singles a week, like on Beatport, for example.
Right, right. But we always love music. We're always going to be there. That's the sound of our life, right? We need that to get us through the day. Yeah,
music is amazing. Absolutely. Now, Ultra, you're very well known in the gay community as well. Any reasons why you think that is, and does it affect you when you're recording a new album?
Well, the reason being is because obviously the gay people are very smart. and have really great taste in music and artists. But no, I mean, you know, I think because the gay culture has always, because they have always been a marginalized culture themselves, that they gravitate towards things that are also marginalized, which is house music and the black diva syndrome. You know, they really connect with the power and authenticity that's there in black female singers, I think. And I think that's been a large part of why my music and many others in particular have always connected with that community. When it comes to actually recording, I don't really take that so much into account because I think that people really generally are the same. Their needs and wants and necessities are pretty much the same across the board, no matter what their lifestyle is in particular. So I think more in the broad scheme of things than so specifically that this person is gay or, you know, will the straight kids get this? Like, if people are looking for love, you're looking for love in general. And that doesn't matter whether you're black, white, straight, or gay or whatever. You're looking for love, and that's the story. That's the message.
That's so interesting. I mean, that's great. And it's true. We are very, very tasteful people. So, just, you know, I mean, I have Liz as a co-host, so she's very tasteful.
Well, see, you're too sweet. You're making me blush.
But the gay community, you know, I've always given a lot of props to and a lot of love to the gay community for my success because they have always been a very loyal fan base, and they have been there from the beginning. And, you know, records that may not have connected elsewhere have connected in the gay community, and they've always given that love back. And they've always, you know, they've been there through the thick and thin, through the big pop singles that everybody might know to, like, you know, the album cuts that were just, like, part of the story, part of the shape of, like, what that story was at that period in time. And I really love that. You know, I have some fans out there that they can give me more information about my albums than I remember. And it's hysterical because I'm like, wow, you, like, really were paying attention. I was just going through, you know, just on autopilot, like, whatever I was feeling at that moment. But, like, you really examined this thoroughly. And got it, you know?
Yeah, I'm that person. I love the B-sides. I love the stuff that's not mainstream. I love following
See,
your career.
This is
like,
what
I really
about.
Love an artist. Yeah, like you, when I really love an artist, like I loved your cover of Brass and Pocket, which most people probably know you did. But
exactly.
It was a great, great cover of this, you know, the Pretender song, Brass and Pocket. And it's just like, you know, it's stuff like that that I loved Amy Winehouse before she became famous. I loved Lady Gaga before she was Lady Gaga, you know? So it was just like, all these artists, and you follow them, like you just said, you follow them through because they're so talented, and I do love me a good black diva, so you're definitely on my number one list.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That says a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. So
I'm just visualizing. Go ahead.
Uh-oh.
Let's do it.
Go ahead, Liz. What are you visualizing?
I was visualizing drag queens lip-singing to Ultra's music. That's all. You had me going there for a minute.
Yes, they definitely do that. They definitely do
okay,
that. And there was actually a tribute done for me in New York quite a few years back
awesome.
With the Queens doing lip syncing their favorite Alternate sauce. And it was very.
I love it.
It was so entertaining and so wonderful. And I was so honored that the community came out and honored me that way. It was amazing.
That's awesome. Ultra, before we let you go, we ask our listeners to go to getunleashedproductions.com and click the confessions link. And basically what they do is they want to know, they have a burning question that they really just need an answer for. So if we could, I'd love to read this week's confession to you, and if you would honestly answer for them, and give them your best advice.
Okay.
Go ahead, Liz.
Okay, here goes. My best friend from school is pregnant. Her baby's father is practically non-existent, and she has no other friends besides me and one other person. I'm the only one so far who knows about her pregnancy. She hasn't told her dad and her grandparents because she's scared they'll kick her out. She has nowhere to go. My parents have told me to cut her off. What should I do? Signed, Unsure in Taiwan.
Oh, my. That's terrible. That person's parents told them to cut her off. Well, that's absolutely not what you should do. That's you know. Sometimes parents forget what it's like to be a teenager or young person, and there are a lot of struggles and a lot of pressure And that girl is going through something really, really difficult right now, and she's bringing another life into the world potentially. She's going to need all the friends that she can get. I absolutely would not cut her off, and that's probably going to cause some kind of issue, you know, with the parents. Maybe, we hope not, but that definitely would not be the right thing to do. You have to basically put yourself in the other person's shoes and, you know, realize that she's probably scared to death, especially if her parents, if there's this looming thought of being put out of the house and she doesn't have any other friends and any support system. That's not a position that anyone would want to be in, and they definitely wouldn't want to have to go through it completely alone. So, you know, you're just going to have to find the strength within yourself to follow your heart and to be a real friend to her, you know, because she really is going to need it. This is a very difficult time, and having a child is a very, very difficult thing to do and a lot of responsibility. You guys need to be maybe investigating where she can find support outside of her house. You know, the beauty of the internet now is that you ask a question and the information is there. You just got to ask the right questions. Start finding out what in your what kind of community support can possibly be there, what kind of programs might possibly be there for her to find housing, support for her baby. You know, the best kind of friend you can be right now is to help her get a firm handle on how to go forward. You know, it's unfortunate that her parents have taken such a stance on it. The way to resolve an issue is absolutely not to kick the child out and leave them on their own, because now you have two children out there. So, yeah, that's my take on it. I would absolutely stand by my friend, and I would try to help her figure out, you know, other ways of finding support for herself and her baby.
That's good advice.
That's excellent advice. I absolutely agree. And it's just, I don't understand, and maybe I'm opening up a can of worms here, but I just don't understand how parents, and I'm not a parent, but both of you are, so maybe you can answer this for me, but I don't understand, like, if, you know, my child came out as gay or I have a pregnant, you know, teenager, how can you throw them out? That's just, that baffles me. I never understood.
Yeah, I've got nothing.
I think the sad, cold fact is some people just don't want to be inconvenienced. They have their own, their little world set up the way they have it, and it's tragic. I agree, but that's where their head's at. Maybe they need to look outside themselves and
figure out
their...
Well, clearly the parents have problems.
Yeah.
There's definitely some problem of disconnect there, because your child is unconditional love.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, bottom line.
So how are you just going to, you know, say, oh, you know what, you're not what I wanted you to be, so I'm going to try over, and then you need to go somewhere else. So.
And obviously you'd want her to have waited to have a child, but that child
Walmart,
is your grandchild.
Huh?
You know, that's
right.
Your grandchild in there.
That's right.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. Let's shamelessly promote. Let's tell everybody where they can find you and all the good
yes.
stuff, all the social medias, everything. What's coming up for Ultra?
Oh, there's so many really groovy things going on. I'm working on a new album, always. Working on some new collaboration projects. Eddie Amador, Take Care of My Heart just came out, and some new remixes coming behind that. I also have some stuff coming out with David Morales in the summer and a couple of other folks that I'm collaborating with. I'm constantly writing new music. My Deep Sugar Party, that is my own baby, my own pure warehouse, underground, deep, soulful garage house party that I DJ, and my team of really great resident DJs and guests every other Saturday, basically second and fourth Saturday of every month here in Baltimore at the Paradox, is going on. And then, of course, you know, in between that, I'm running around the globe. You can always find me on my Facebook page on Ultra Nate. My Twitter, again, Ultra Nate Music. I'm right there, and most of the time I answer my own tweets and Facebook posts as much as I can. My management does supplement, but most of the time, you know, I try to be on it myself and be here for my fans. And I love to hear from my fans, and I love to have that kind of interaction going on.
Excellent. And any words of advice to ours and your listeners?
To our listeners?
Yes.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Any words of advice to our listeners?
Oh, words of advice to the listeners. Well, let's see. It's 2015, and I absolutely believe that we have to do better, just in general, as people, as a human race, as a family, We have to work to do better. We have to work to stop being so reliant on the technical part of what's going on, our technology, and learn to make a human connection again.
Amen.
Amen. That's right.
I
and one
agree.
More question before I let you go. Did you have fun unstrapping your bra and getting unleashed with us tonight?
Unstrapping the bra is like a bowl of ice cream. It's
you
like
sure
freedom.
That
is
a, you sure
it's
that
like
is
freedom
two bowls
here.
Of ice cream, honey?
Let
it's
me
like,
tell
how soon
you,
can
I
get to that?
Yeah.
Two tasty bowls of ice cream.
Yeah,
let's not forget
like,
the making
that
cork
off at the end of the show. I can breathe.
There you go.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time tonight. And we had a blast. We absolutely had a blast.
Oh,
we got to learn so much
fun.
About you. And I am
thank
such a huge
guys.
Fan. I'm so glad that you took the time. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to speaking to you all again.
It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Stop by anytime. Make sure you unstrap your bra first, though.
Clearly. Yes.
Oh, Liz, what are we going to do with ourselves?
Oh, just enjoy. Bask in the glory. How about it? I'm loving
absolutely.
Me ultra natte. Yeah. What a legend. What a legend.
What a legend. Absolutely.
That's
but right. You know what? We also have another legend with us tonight, too. And she starts with a B, and it's not this.
Oh, no. Quit talking about yourself.
Oh, girl.
No,
her name is Brittany Maxwell.
Okay.
Yeah, she's going to give us her here town moment. So she just steps in the studio. Here you go, Bree.
Have you been hoping for a style expert to help you have a fabulous life? The time has come to add sizzle to your style. With a hearty here's how moment, it's time for Breeny Maxwell, America's domestic doyen.
This is Breeny Maxwell with this week's Hints for Gracious Living. For most people today, a dream kitchen has sleek stainless steel appliances and granite countertops. In my case, my kitchen looks like an issue of House and Garden, from 1966. There's a small but growing faction of, fanatics who favor something a little more off the beaten path, the retro kitchen. But how do you go about creating a retro kitchen? Start with planning. Decorating a kitchen is much like decorating any other room. The challenge is finding appliances that fit in. Most appliance shops would look at you like you had six heads if you asked them if they had anything that looked, well, old. Home decorating magazines and books from the period are great resources for deciding what you want your kitchen to look like, and the magazines frequently have ads for appliances which you can use just as you would new publications for researching and selecting your vintage units. Once you've made some decisions, it's time to go to the internet. It's good to know what you're getting yourself into with vintage appliances. Appliances like cars are workhorses. We take them for granted until they break down. Also, like cars, they have parts that can wear out. Luckily for us appliance fanatics, there are services like antiqueappliances.com, antiquevintageappliances.com, and decodan.com that will restore vintage appliances to like new, well, even better than new condition. Sometimes they will even provide a manual and a warranty for a restored appliance. Most of these companies specialize in one type of appliance restoration, say washing machines, refrigerators, or stoves. Contact a few of them with the make, model, and year of the appliances that you're interested in, and see if they have any units in stock. If not, ask them if they can do a search for you. Once you have your major appliance situation sorted out, you can start to explore the world of countertop appliances and accessories by haunting thrift shops, flea markets, and garage sales, or, well, in the comfort of your own home on sites like eBay. Sprinkling your shiny new plastic laminate counters with a sparkling assortment of era-appropriate gadgets like electric can openers, wall-mounted hand mixers, electric frying pans, toaster ovens, blenders, and griddles is such a delight because of the design of these items. And they and their larger, major appliance cousins come from a time when whimsy and detail and industrial design were part of daily life. Because they're made mostly of metal and the plastic parts are usually black and of extremely durable quality, they clean up beautifully. And because they were made to be repaired, unlike today's disposable counterparts, they can be reconditioned fairly easily. Sometimes you can even do the work yourself. Once you get started, you'll find it hard to stop. There's so much out there to experience in vintage kitchen gadgets, from the hot dogger to the kebabit. There's something for every taste and whim. Now, don't forget that rotary wall phone. Next week, I'll have some tips on mid-century collectibles that are good investments. Until then, I'm Brittany Maxwell. Bye now.
From Breenie at BreenieMaxwell.com.
Oh, thank you so much, Breenie. Hey, Liz, you know what my favorite kitchen gadget is?
What's that?
The hot dog bobber.
You know, I was thinking about you when Breenie said, once you get started, you'll find it hard to stop. I'm thinking that's David Allen with the hot dog bobber.
Breenie. Oh. You know, I love Breenie because she's so innocent, and she doesn't intentionally get dirty with us, but you know,
don't play dumb. She just makes you think she's pure as the driven snow, hunty. But, you know, she slips it in there. She definitely slips it in there.
She does. Hot dog bobbers and ultra mate. And, you know, I just don't know what to do. Tonight's been such an exciting night for me. Oh, my God.
It has been fun. We've been speaking to all your heroes of your of your musical past. I love it. It all makes sense now.
Well,
all the divas that you enjoy.
Let me do a little confession since we're talking about this. These people artists, I'm going to call them, Ultra, Crystal Waters, Robin S., have been such an influence on my life growing up as a kid.
I can tell.
And it was phenomenal because when I listen to them and when I talk to them, it's just like it takes me right back to my childhood, that moment pawn shop where I was standing in a record store or just listening to stuff on the radio. Like, I remember having a CD Walkman, you know, a cassette player, and it was just so cool. So to talk to these people, and I think the best part about it, just like me, they're still relevant today.
I was thinking that the moment you lost your virginity, but okay.
That was the sting. No, I'm just kidding. Everybody
the music was playing. Boy, we should ask our listeners what music was playing when the moment you lost your virginity. Could you imagine the responses we'd get?
They could just go to the sex box. Yeah. So either way,
that's gonna be a fun show. We're talking
that's
to one of the therapists from
we
WeTV, the sex box.
Yes.
That'll be
Dr. Yvonne. So definitely stay tuned for that. And don't forget, you know, getunleashedproductions.com. Please keep sending in your confessions. We love seeing them and talking about them. I apologize if we don't get your confessions on, but we get so many per week, you have to pick the best one. So there's that. Follow us on all the social medias. GetUnleashed09 for Facebook and Twitter. Listen to us on Stitcher and iTunes and any other podcasting website out there. Did I miss anything, Liz?
The quickies. Tell them about the quickies.
Oh, yes. We've had some great, great quickies. This past week, I got to talk to Hugh Jackman and Sigourney Weaver from the new movie Chappie that's opening up here soon. Before that, I got to talk to the director and the main star of 50 Shades of Grey. You know, so you never know who's going to – these people literally just call my phone and say, hey, is this David Allen? Let's talk. Let's have a conversation. Okay.
Awesome.
Who knows? Monica Lewinsky might call me, and I might go, well, who are you wearing today? Is that still Bill?
Oh. I want to do Hanukkah with Monica. That would be fun.
Hanukkah with Monica.
That would be fun. But I could be for one moment in time. You know, girl can dream, right? Oy vey, right? For Monica.
Oh, I want bigger tits than you want Hanukkah with Monica. So
See? Wishes do come true, sister. So.
I kept the receipt. It has that new car smell.
Okay.
Oh, all right, Liz. Well, I guess have a good night, and until next time,
get unleashed.
Get unleashed. Don't forget to get unleashed. And what was our motto? What's our new motto? We know you're having a one-night stand, but we want to be the ones you remember.
Let's unstrap your bra and get ready to get unleashed.
dirty to me.
David Allen and Liz Stone Unleashed. Tomorrow, it's not decided, and all I know is I'm so delighted to be the one you share this magic. A dream I know